The fog drifted through the streets like a ghost.
That's exactly what it looked like, a thick fog.
It was summertime and it was hot. We would just run through it as fast as we could and try to just cool ourselves off. It stuck to you.
The spray was so foul, the spoiler is the odor. It made some of us have headaches, nausea, dizziness.
That's what I remember. It made me sick.
That is just some of the audio from a new special from Natasha Zuvas, a News Nation Prime anchor. Her special, What Were They Doing in St. Louis, airs during News Nation Prime on Saturday and Sunday, starting at 7 p.m. And Natasha joins us now to give us some more information and insight into exactly what she found. Natasha, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Yeah, Amy and Brad, it's so good to be with you both. I really appreciate it.
Obviously, being here in St. Louis, Pruitt-Igoe, the construction of it, the demolition of it, the consequences and everything else that happened around that whole community has deeply affected St. Louis. And I did not realize that the U.S. Army was conducting tests in Pruitt-Igoe in the housing development while they were figuring out how to fight wars overseas. Can you kind of set the table here for maybe people who didn't realize what was going on?
Absolutely. And Amy, what a privilege to have gotten to be on the ground and visit the incredible city of St. Louis. We were there in April speaking with these residents who feel the government is waiting them out. They feel there is a ticking clock for them. These are the residents who are still around, who are still healthy enough to speak, some of them fighting cancer themselves. We wanted to meet with one woman in particular. We missed her by a matter of days because she died shot through with three different types of terrible cancer, suffering a great deal. So time is of the essence with this story. And you're correct. The U.S. Army sprayed that entire neighborhood, that entire housing project of Pruitt-Igoe of more than 10,000 people in St. Louis with a chemical fog that contained a chemical called zinc cadmium sulfide. It has cadmium in it, which is a carcinogen. It causes cancer without the residents' knowledge or their consent. And they did this because it was the most similar U.S. city that they believe we have to Moscow in terms of population, the types of buildings, the proximity to your beautiful river. They wanted to simulate a radiological attack and warfare against the Soviets in the 50s and 60s. And so they repeatedly sprayed these individuals, and they vividly remember it like it was yesterday, that summer of 1953. It was oppressive. It was hot. The children would run through the spray trying to get some relief. Mothers would try to close their windows against it. They didn't know what it was. And there were men in hazmat suits and goggles and masks installing these boxes on the top of rooftops. The fog would drift down. And then station wagons that would move slowly through the streets of Pruitt-Igoe with nozzles in the back, spraying this fog. The official party line that was told to officials, according to a researcher, Dr. Lisa Martino-Taylor, is that they were testing cloud technology to see if they could shield the city, make it go invisible with a cloud, make it less visible to the enemy. That's not what was happening. They were at the very least testing with zinc cadmium sulfide, a carcinogen, a likely carcinogen. And the residents are coming forward now because they wonder if there was anything worse than that in that spray. They know with their own eyes that their own community has been riddled with terrible cancers, rare cancers. They've been burying their parents, their loved ones. They've been getting sick themselves. No health studies, they say, to this date. And they want to know if, frankly, there was radiation in that spray. And I'll tell you, Amy, we dug into this, and there is a backdrop of troubling human experimentation involving radiation and the government at that time. It's a very valid question.
Oh. Natasha, Brad Young here. And as I've dove into this story, anticipating getting the chance to talk to you, thank you for taking time out of your schedule today. But looking into this, there is some anecdotal evidence that there was, in fact, radioactive materials mixed in there. And that fit in with the plan of the Army to test how we would respond, or how the citizens of a city would respond if dosed with radiation, and how they would respond in terms of deaths and illness and so forth. And you kind of touched on this a second ago, but has there been any follow-up studies to this incident in the 50s, and not just one, but it was over a period of time? Has there been any follow-up studies to track the health impacts of this spraying and how people reacted, what type of diseases that they discovered or developed? Has there been any follow-up of any kind to this?
Yeah, the residents say there hasn't been. And, you know, I'm so grateful that at News Nation, we're going to be shining a national spotlight and putting this in front of the entire country, because these residents are throwing their hands in the air and saying the Army came and did this. In their words, they used us like guinea pigs. And there have been no follow-ups, no health studies. No one's come to test that soil. I went to that lot. It's overgrown with trees. It's not built up still to this day. And we speak with the researcher who's opening her vaults to us. Dr. Lisa Martino-Taylor has dedicated her life to her entire career to declassifying documents from the government to try to shed light on what they did. And she helped blow open from the same era the oatmeal experiments done on children in state schools. Some of them were orphans, and they were told they would be joining a science club, an opportunity for friendship, given trips to the beach, to baseball games. But in fact, they were being fed radioactive oatmeal to see what it would do to their bodies. At the same time, pregnant women in top universities in Tennessee and California were being given radioactive cocktails to see how it would cross the placenta into their unborn babies. They were told they were vitamins. And in some cases, miscarriages and cancers followed. So this is the researcher who helped expose this very large scale spring experiment as well. I mean, 10,000 people in Pruitt-Igoe. But she says, unlike these other egregious cases from this era, where the government has owned up to it, they have released their documents, the government is still refusing to fully disclose what happened in St. Louis and what was in that spray. She wants to know why. And she believes that the contextual evidence does point towards radiation because of the men who were in charge of that study, because of what they did with that data and the timing of it as well.
Wow, I did not know about some of those other cases of testing that you mentioned. Just briefly, where was the oatmeal testing on kids? Where was that?
It was in Massachusetts and in other areas as well. It was not in St. Louis itself.
It's awful. And it hits so close to home, Natasha. It's a really personal, sensitive, intimate subject here. Because as I'm sure you know from Senator Josh Hawley, when the Manhattan Project was in full force, you had all of that enriched uranium and radioactive material here in St. Louis produced by Mallinckrodt, and the Cotter Corporation just dumped it in North St. Louis County and Westlake Landfill, Coldwater Creek. A lot of my family friends grew up there and have just a proliferation of rare cancers in their families and are sick. And this type of government testing and seeming disregard for the population, it's got to be more prevalent than I ever thought. Or it was more prevalent, I should say.
It's absolutely horrifying. And you're right. I mean, all of these historical cases where St. Louis has just bore the brunt. It has just been used by so many, whether it's corporations or these larger nefarious entities, as a dumping ground, as an experiment, as an experimentation ground. It's disgusting. And I can tell you, Amy and Brad, you know, we've been working on this story since April. And obviously these residents have been living this for decades now. This story has kept me up at night. This story is what's waking me up at 3 a.m. And I'm just so grateful that this is finally coming to light in a really big way. Congress is starting to listen. They are going to be pushing for things. I brought this to Aaron Brockovich, the Aaron Brockovich of Julia Roberts, that movie, that Oscar-winning movie. She is completely outraged at what has happened in St. Louis as well. And we're going to see if we can get some change and accountability. These residents, at the very least, are asking for an apology from the government for being used this way. They're asking for health studies for them and their kids and their grandkids. And they're looking for compensation that they very rightly deserve for what's happened to them. No one's tested that soil. No one is tracking their health. All they know is they're looking around them and they're developing rare lymphomas, strange cancers of the kidneys, et cetera. And they're hoping someone finally listens. So I'm very grateful you're having me on today. Thank you so much for helping to amplify this.
Yeah, we're talking to Natasha Zuvas. She is a News Nation Prime anchor. And we're talking about what were they doing in St. Louis, which will actually air this weekend on News Nation Prime, Saturday and Sunday, starting at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern, 7 o'clock p.m. Central. And we talked briefly, Natasha, about this idea of Coldwater Creek and the Manhattan Project, something called RICA, because under the doctrine of sovereign immunity, you can't sue the government unless the government consents to that. So are you aware of any move in Washington right now to kind of replicate this, what's called RECA with the Manhattan Project bill that was passed and signed into law? Are you aware of any similar action or activity politically to open this up in Washington, D.C., to get to the bottom of this and perhaps even provide compensation for the victims?
Yeah, so I spoke with Representative Wesley Bell on this of Missouri. He is advocating for RECA, the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act, for these residents in St. Louis. There is a big issue here, and it isn't even the bipartisan will to get it done, which he's not even sure if that exists or that is there, which is that because so many of these documents remain classified, the people of Pruitt-Igoe have not been able to prove radiation exposure. So without being able to definitively prove that, they are not eligible for radiation compensation. And, you know, for this story, there was a specific document this researcher has never been able to declassify. It's called Joint Quarterly Report 5. We submitted the FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act request to the government to try to get that declassified. As you likely know, by law, the government has to respond to that within 20 working days. They never responded. More than 3 months, multiple follow-ups, phone calls, emails. No one is getting back to us. That's a constructive denial. Separately, we asked the Army point blank, was there radiation in that spray? They could have just said no. That is not what they said. They provided a one-page statement that said none of the reports contain evidence of a radioactive component. They're pointing us towards reviews and reports done by other people like the National Research Council. Now, stay with me here because this is important. A close read of the NRC's report shows that even the NRC admits they could not fully assess the risk of the spraying in St. Louis because when they asked the Army for key records, the Army replied that the documents were either classified or were missing. The Army could not find them. So it is this huge black hole of information here where these residents are getting older, they're getting sicker, they're burying their loved ones, they're not able to get answers from the government and from the Army. We will be appealing that FOIA denial, and we are absolutely staying on this story. I am hellbent on getting them some answers.
Wow. And I know we need to let you go. And pardon my ignorance on this question. Does it have to be radiation because of RECA? Like just knowing that it was cadmium, which is a carcinogen, that's not enough?
Yeah, such a good question, Amy. And it's so funny because we're talking about these two bars here. The government admits that they sprayed zinc cadmium sulfide on these people without their knowledge and without their consent. Is that not enough? Right. I mean, that is so egregious. That is so awful. And there is still a lot of contention and issue. The Army does not believe that they sprayed it at high enough levels to cause cancer. But we also don't really know because the NRC even itself said, yeah, at high enough levels, it can cause kidney and organ and bone toxicity. Mm-hmm. But we're not really sure about the exact levels that were sprayed on them. And, you know, we don't really have the studies to confirm that. And these people haven't been followed. Their health studies haven't happened. The soil tests haven't happened. So, yes, Amy, you're right. At the very least, a chemical containing cadmium was sprayed on more than 10,000 people in St. Louis. And they do not have the health studies to confirm what has happened to them afterwards. That is true. That is uncontestable. And it is not enough to be part of RECA because RECA has to do with radiation only. And they have not cleared that bar in terms of proving that there was radiation in that spray.
Oh, wow. It is absolutely devastating and so important. And I think the most important thing we can do now is keep bringing attention to it, like with RECA and Coldwater Creek and Westlake Landfill. So Natasha Zuves, News Nation Prime anchor, what were they doing in St. Louis? It airs during News Nation Prime this Saturday and Sunday, starting at 7 p.m. Natasha, we would love to have you on again and continue this conversation. It is so important. Thank you for the work you're doing.
It would be my privilege. Thank you so much, Amy and Brad. Appreciate you both.
Thank you. Again, Natasha Zuves, News Nation Prime, Saturday and Sunday at 7 p.m. You don't want to miss it. He's Brad Young. I'm Amy Markscores. This is the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX.
Show on 104.1 FM KMOX, sponsored by the St. Louis Aquarium. Explore the St. Louis Aquarium at Union Station.
Brad Young, Amy Markscores, and I hate to say this, I really don't want to start with this, but...
Do it. Talk to me. Talk to me, Amy.
Our producer, Matt, over here.
What?
Usually, oh, yeah. I love him.
Oh, yeah.
It's fake news. Fake news, clickbait.
What?
He said Amy has road rage. The fact is, Brad, I'm the victim.
You're the victim of road rage.
I'm the victim of road rage. Can I tell you what happened this morning?
Tell me.
And I need to know, I actually have a real legal recourse question with it, but it was a beautiful morning.
Oh, it was gorgeous.
I had my sweater on. I had my sweater on and my coffee.
Low 60s.
Ugh, gorgeous. I'm listening to Total Information AM on the Odyssey app. Well, actually, I was in my car, so it was 104.1 FM because I'm a P1, which is a great listener. And I was really enjoying myself. And I bring this up because I want people to know I was not driving angrily or aggressively. I wasn't in a hurry, but I was on my way to work. I wasn't early, but we'll leave it at that. And I turn on to Hanley, and I'm on Hanley, and I want to get on the highway. Hanley is, you know, two lanes northbound, two lanes southbound. But I'm on northbound Hanley, two lanes. And at one point, a third lane is created so that you can get in the lane to get on the highway. So here I am, and I see the third lane's coming up. Right as I hit the third lane, put my blinker on, look in the rearview mirror, start to get over, because, of course, I'm getting over into a lane that was just created. It didn't exist. The car behind me did that real fast, jerky movement when it went, and it, like, swung over, and it was already parallel with me right when I was about to get over. And it shocked me because, I mean, this person floored it to get in front of me in the third lane.
Right.
But I was, and so, like, I pulled back into my lane, and I was so shocked that I flung my arm, like, towards the window, and I went, whoa, whoa. I did it twice. I flung my arm, extended my elbow.
Road rage.
You didn't tell them that they were number one, did you?
No, that's
okay,
what I mean.
Just
I flung my arm because it wasn't even like I, you know, sometimes you project in road rage where someone cuts you off and suddenly you're like, that is the worst person in the world.
I'm walking here.
Yeah. I feel like I was delightful and pleasant this morning, but I was so taken aback because this person, we almost crashed because she tried to cut me off. So I get behind her because I have to get on the highway. So I get behind her. Well, she must have seen me throw my arm and go, whoa, whoa, because in the middle of Hamley, with no one in front of her, slams on the brakes.
Oh, no.
Stops in the middle of the road. I slam on my brakes, and then she holds up her fist. And to be honest, I actually thought it was a man because she had stumpy little man hands. I don't know how to describe it. They were just, like, kind of thick. And I say this because, of course, I'm mad at her and I'm taking personal shots. But she held up her fist, and I can't tell if it was her fist or her finger. I'm assuming it should be her finger, but it kind of felt like her fist and was like going like this at me. And then she started driving again, and you could tell she was like so mad. I was taken aback. I did, however, get her license plate. I'm not going to dox her, but if you are the person in the black Subaru sedan, I don't know if it's a Legacy, whatever the little black Subaru sedan is.
Yep.
And I'm going to tell you, I was super upset and disappointed that a Subaru driver would act like this because I like to think that Subaru drivers are superior, but she wasn't, or he wasn't. I think it was a woman.
Well,
I'm not sure.
Today, you never know, really, if it's someone's a man or a woman.
You never,
a completely different issue. Totally different.
But she was so mean, and I mean, I could have hit her because she went from, you know, her 45, 50 miles an hour on Hanley to slamming on the brakes. And I got her license plate number. And I thought, if I had hit her, that would have been my fault, right? Because I hit the person in front of me.
No.
How could I prove that she slammed on the brakes?
It would be your word against hers. But technically, if someone slams on their brakes in a roadway, they are creating the hazard and they are at fault.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be their liability. But it would be a difficult time without a dash cam. It would be very difficult to prove that this he/she actually did that. All right. It would be hard to prove.
Yep.
You'd have to go in and lay out your whole story. But technically, she would be at fault if you could prove it.
Right. And I couldn't.
Well, she couldn't prove otherwise either. I mean, so at this point, it would be a he said, he slash she said.
Yeah.
You don't really know, but that's what it would be.
And now I was so frustrated with that. And if you are that person, you're listening. Yes, I know your license plate number. And yes, I'm on with a lawyer today. So,
but, you know,
you're shaking in your boots.
Now, here's an interesting theory.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love postulating on things like this, right? You could take the position that she was attempting to assault you with her vehicle.
I felt assaulted.
You felt assaulted, right? Yeah. And so because of that, you are utilizing your legal rights under the Stand Your Ground doctrine, as well as the Castle doctrine. And you are simply defending yourself under the Castle doctrine. Uh-huh. You can defend yourself within your car, and you could have slammed into her, right? And argue, I was simply defending myself from her use of the car as a weapon against me. And I was defending myself, and I was right to do so under both Stand Your Ground and the Castle doctrine. Could have made that argument.
See, that's why I do need to call you. I would be so bad in court. If I were a lawyer, I would cry all the time.
That's generally a bad thing.
Because I felt like to be completely honest, because I was having a nice morning, it hurt my feelings that she was so mad at me.
Aww.
I know. And I still feel really sad about it.
And you had that adrenaline rush after it happened?
Yes.
Right. Rage.
Rage. I mean, but it was like hurt feeling rage. And I did. I flung my arm kind of like, all of this is yours. All that the sun is touching is yours. Like, you know, I thought it was rather a royal gesture, but I did, you know, and
she may have thought it was a different type of gesture.
She might have, which is maybe why she got so mad, but she probably couldn't see me because she cut me off. But here's the thing. I don't like that jerky. And I don't mean like you're a jerk, but that jerky when someone like makes real quick movements.
Sure.
And she was in such a hurry. Like if she thought I was slow, let me get in the right lane and then she could have passed.
Right.
But the fact that as soon as that lane opened up, I didn't even have time to get over in the lane and she was already passing me. It was the worst. I'm going to get a dash cam. I don't trust the he said, she said. I don't trust it. I feel like no one, because I have a guilty conscience or then guilty face.
You do not have a guilty face.
But
what you need to do is get yourself a dash cam. In fact, if you go on YouTube and put in Russian car crash videos, you'll laugh for 30 minutes, okay? Because in Russia, everybody has a dash cam because they drive like maniacs over there, right?
Good to know.
All right, if you put in Russian car crash videos, your entire lunch hour, you'll be entertained while you're eating your lunch because they all have dash cams for that very reason.
That's really funny.
So you need to get yourself a dash cam. Oh, yeah, they drive they're insane the way they drive in Russia.
I need to get a dash cam and I'll need to watch that video, maybe for some levity, because little Subaru driver, you hurt my feelings. That's Brad Young. I'm Amy Marks-Gores. It's the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX.
Wake up in four.
It's Thursday.
Really? Feels like Tuesday.
I thought it was Friday for like 20 hours. Stretching into yesterday, I kept thinking today was Friday, but it is not. And if you're wondering where Chris Ronji is, he is at the Oasis concert or visiting his family in Chicago, the secretive wife and kids. Filling in is Brad Young. Now, there is something about Brad Young that makes him an absolute text magnet. You're a text magnet. People love to text when you're on the airwaves. And some of the texts that have come in have been pretty hilarious because we were lamenting, bemoaning, whatever you want to call it, how everything is politicized to the point that Cracker Barrel changing its logo was suddenly woke.
Yes.
And like you said, you feel like you have a pretty good sensor for when something has shifted left or maybe is a progressive sticking point. But you were like, what in the world are people talking about with Cracker Barrel being woke? Well, unrelated to politics at all, our question of the week was about Bruce Springsteen. Why do I bring this up? Because years ago, when I was on the Charlie Brennan show, I had said this thing about Bruce Springsteen being overrated and everybody got riled up. Remember, this is years ago. Well, earlier this week, it was the 50th anniversary of Born to Run.
Exactly. I saw it. I saw he was interviewed. Yeah. I saw a bunch of specials on it. Sure.
And so I thought it would be hilarious to revive the conversation, the debate about Bruce Springsteen, because everybody likes a bad opinion, because I figured it is a bad opinion. Like, I know when I'm wrong. Like when I mistakenly said that David Fries shouldn't be in the Cardinals Hall of Fame, I was wrong. I said it, I take it back. And now it's a whole thing. I thought this was one of my wrong opinions that would be funny. And just because, I don't know, I personally don't care for Bruce Springsteen's type of music, even though he's one of the greatest rock stars of all time. And Brad Young, people think this is political.
No.
They all think, they're like, you're, you know, Rush Limbaugh's daughter. That's why you don't like Bruce Springsteen. I didn't even know what they were talking about.
Yeah, I was called MAGA on the text line today. And there is literally nothing about me that's MAGA. I've never voted for Donald Trump. I don't mind saying that. I've never once voted for him. And when I'm on the Glover show and I analyze stuff about legally how a lot of the stuff that Donald Trump does is wrong legally and constitutionally, then people accuse me of being a progressive. But I'm not. I mean, I've got the best social bona fides of anyone, or a Republican or conservative bona fides. But in this instance, my opinions about Bruce Springsteen were apolitical. I laid out multiple reasons why he's overrated. Not that he's bad, but just that he's overrated. Nothing about politics. And then, of course, I get attacked, which is fine. I don't mind being attacked. In fact, I rather enjoy it.
You're good at it. It hurts my feelings.
It doesn't hurt my feelings in any way. Not in any way. Right.
Well, and I think there's a 618 that I think is just absolutely convinced that this is the the Rush Limbaugh radio hour. And I would love that 618 to know, and I don't know if the 618 listens all the time, this particular texter. I get called a communist, Amy Marxist Coors. Oh my gosh. I am a raging progressive to a lot of people. And so if you think the Bruce Springsteen thing is politically motivated, what's the phrase? Touch grass. Like, you know, like seriously, like get a life. Seriously. Because everything is not politically motivated. I think it is very much so online.
Yes,
and probably on national news, cable news, I should say, talk shows. Correct. But I don't hate myself enough to watch cable news shows. I don't hate myself enough to subject myself to the torment of watching cable talk shows. So this, I would hope, is a place where people can gather with a little bit of levity and a little bit of fun. An idea exchange is such a great way to put it.
It is.
And apparently, no, you can't.
Well, you know, there's a great phrase in the legal world. When you have a settlement, settle a civil case. And if both the plaintiff and the defendant are upset about the settlement.
Mm-hmm.
In the legal world, attorneys will tell you that means the settlement is exactly right.
Is that the Solomon splitting the baby?
Yes, because if the plaintiff is too happy, that means it went too far one way. If the defendant is too happy, it went too far the other way. If both the plaintiff and defendant are upset with the settlement, it's probably the right number.
Okay. Okay?
Oh, yeah, so I'm saying that in the context of if those on the right call you a socialist and those on the left call you Rush Limbaugh's illegitimate daughter.
Yes.
Then at that point, I would say,
whoa,
Amy.
Whoa, I was legitimate.
Oh, legitimate.
I wasn't an illegitimate daughter. I was Rush Limbaugh's daughter.
Oh, okay.
I just threw in the illegitimate. But anyway,
But if they're calling you Rush Limbaugh's daughter on one side and Amy Marx Corps socialist on the other side, I would argue that that means you're getting it just about right.
Why, thank you very much. That's what I like to say. I always still tell our boss, Steve, I'm doing something right because everybody hates me.
Exactly. Exactly. Not that everybody hates you, but that you're not too far one way or the other.
Now, we do have a defender of Mr. Young who said, great. Brad, whoever would say anything sideways about you clearly has never listened to you.
Thank you. Thanks, Mom. Thanks for texting in, Mom. I appreciate it.
Yes, signed Mrs. Young. But I do feel like if everything's political, nothing's political. But it also, we're taking ourselves so seriously. The reason why everything being political is so dangerous is because politics has a place of prominence in our life that previously could only be compared to like religion.
Mm-hmm.
It's taken an almost sacred spot in a lot of Americans' lives, where I think the left and its ideology can very much be religious in nature. And I think the right, even some who claim to be the Christian right or whatever, it'd be very hard mm-hmm. to separate their political views from their Christianity. And that's not a good sign. And so I think when you have a society in which religion is personal, because it is your faith. And if you attack my side, you attack my God type of thing. Mm-hmm. And then everything is political. Then something as stupid as Cracker Barrel or Bruce Springsteen gets people worked up.
Exactly. But, you know, here's the problem. And this really sums it up in one thought. And that's this. Tribalism is really intellectual laziness. Because I always like to say that if you disagree with my idea, address the merits, right? You saw mm-hmm. that in the text lines. Address the merits. Let's go. Let's talk about the merits. Don't label me as MAGA. Don't label me as a communist, because that's intellectual laziness that's designed to avoid the points at issue. And
this is breaking news from St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Got Sean Malone on the phone.
Oh,
guys.
Hello, Sean.
Hello. We've got breaking news here. St. Louis City Sheriff Alfred Montgomery, we can confirm, has been indicted on a federal charge today. It's one misdemeanor count of deprivation of rights under color of law, and it's related to the detainment of Tammy Ross, the deputy director of the St. Louis City Justice Center, who back in the winter, early on in the tenure of Alfred Montgomery, was detained while he was trying to conduct his own investigation of alleged misconduct by one of his deputies at the jail.
All right. So what does this mean right now? What does it look like where you are, Sean?
I'm right outside the federal courthouse building, along with a flurry of other press that continue to arrive, waiting for the sheriff to step out now to see what he has to say about this federal indictment, this misdemeanor indictment against him, and what it might mean for the Quo Warranto case against him. Because unlawfully detaining Tammy Ross was one of the counts against Sheriff Alfred Montgomery in the effort by Attorney General Andrew Bailey to remove him from office.
Now, Sean, you mentioned Tammy Ross. Does this arise out of the incident? We've all seen the video, I think, where Tammy yeah. Ross was being escorted out. It was on video. She was handcuffed and she was forcibly ejected from the jail facility. Is that the situation that we're talking about here?
Yes, the documentation is not public online yet. And while I've been told it doesn't directly name it Tammy Ross, it's one of those where it looks like a duck, it sounds like a duck. Yeah. You can infer that the duck they are referring to without naming them is Tammy Ross. And that incident exactly that you're talking about, where Sheriff Alfred Montgomery is seen ordering her detention.
Now, we know that Attorney General Andrew Bailey had been looking into Alfred Montgomery with all of the other things that we saw, whether the way he handled firing or retaining employees or his expenditures. But all of that investigation, this is the one that the Attorney General's office has found. They've, for lack of a better term, got the goods on this one. This is what they're pursuing.
Yes, they've got six counts originally. The Attorney General's office just dropped count one of nepotism just the other day. But this is one of the counts. And again, with that quo warranto, they only have to be proven correct in one of those counts to successfully remove Sheriff Alfred Montgomery from office. They don't need to hit on all or a majority of those counts against the St. Louis City Sheriff. But this certainly adds some leverage to the Attorney General's case that, at least on a misdemeanor level, the FBI is saying, we agree this was an unlawful detainment of Deputy Director Tammy Ross.
Sean Malone, KMOX reporter, thank you so much for the update on Sheriff Alfred Montgomery.
No problem, guys.
Well, go ahead, Brad.
This is interesting because it was released yesterday. I believe the attorney for Alfred Montgomery released DNA evidence to show that the person that he hired was not actually a blood relative. That came out yesterday. That was part of the quo warranto action, that because under the Missouri Constitution, if you hire a relative, that's nepotism and you're automatically disqualified from office under the Missouri Constitution.
This is a technicality. So many blended families, stepson, girlfriend, son from a previous relationship. Does it have to be blood for it to count as nepotism?
That's great. That's a great question. Under the statute, it says a certain you have to be related within a certain degree of, I think, what's the term? The term now is escaping my mind. It's a fancy term, not continuity, but it's a big word. Mm-hmm. I'll think of it as soon as we're off the air. But it does say that you have to be within a certain level of relation, right? And so that would still be an issue, even if he's not a blood relative. Maybe it's an adoption. Maybe it's a, you know, one of those situations. But if you look at the federal indictment, this does shed new light on the quo warranto, because if he is convicted or decides to plead guilty to these charges under the federal law, that could essentially mean that he's out of office.
Wow. Well, I mean, the Ronge is gone for this, but with Sheriff Alfred Montgomery, we've talked, and obviously an indictment, very serious business. We've almost laughed about it because some of the issues plaguing his office were very much, they were self-caused, whether it was rolling golden dice to see if an employee could keep his job, buying the golf carts, wanting a new SUV for the office. And the Alder people were just befuddled. Why would you ever need a golf cart? Your job is to transfer inmates from one building to the next. Golf cart wouldn't be good for that. He also had work vehicles used, had deputies pick up his kids from school. So again, the one that they're looking at right now had to do with the incident early in the year with Deputy Jail Commissioner Tammy Ross. We're going to break, so we're not going to let this rabbit go down a rabbit hole too much. But when you did talk about blood versus like a blood relation versus just close relation, is it like the incest rules? You know, like nepotism?
I'm not from Arkansas. I do not know what the incest rules are.
I had this conversation like years ago, but I just, you know, because it's not just about blood relations, like knowing you have a relation. I ask this because in Hallmark Channel, it's always the parents and the kids marrying. And I'm like, yeah, but now you're marrying your stepbrother. And like, well, if you do it at the same time, it's not really your stepbrother.
And that's the only problem you have with stuff on the Hallmark Channel? How about suspension of disbelief? That's the...
Whatever, Brad. That's Brad Young. I'm Amy Mark Scores. The Chris and Amy Show on... Brad Young, Amy Mark Scores with you. We just heard from Sean Malone that St. Louis Sheriff Alfred Montgomery has been indicted in federal court regarding an incident earlier this year involving the Deputy Jail Commissioner Tammy Ross. And Brad, you had just some insight on how this might look or what angles, from which angles to look at this case.
Yeah, legally speaking, there's two sides to the issue, because number one, under section 561.021 of Missouri law, under that statutory section, a government official must resign or can be forced from office immediately if they're convicted of a felony or they plead guilty to a felony. What Sean Malone reported was that the charges from the feds, those were misdemeanor charges. So that statute wouldn't kick in. However, under section 561 of the Missouri statutes, there's another provision that says if you're convicted or plead guilty to an offense involving misconduct in office or dishonesty, then that is also makes you subject to being forfeiting your position from office. So one could make the argument that improperly imprisoning someone while you are the sheriff constitutes misconduct in office, even if it's not a felony. And because of that misconduct may result in the forfeiture of their office. So those are the two sides to this particular issue.
What kind of timeline are we looking at? I said Contreras appealed his suspension and got to play in the meantime. Does Alfred Montgomery get to play in the meantime?
Yes, with one difference with that metaphor that you use.
Okay.
Essentially, Contreras has already been convicted. He's just appealing it, right? Mm-hmm. So under Missouri law, if you're convicted of a felony or you're convicted of misconduct in office, even if you file an appeal, upon that conviction, you forfeit your office, even though if you're appealing it.
Okay.
So until he's convicted, or maybe he's not convicted, that's why just being charged doesn't mean that he forfeits his office, and he'll stay in office until such time as he's either convicted or he pleads guilty to those charges.
So how long will that process take?
Well, typically the feds come in, it's called legal shock and awe, where they come in with overwhelming evidence. So if you want to do the Bill Clinton and say, I'm going to deny, even though there's evidence of a stain on the dress, even if you're going to take that position, you could take it to trial. That would probably take at least a year. But if he decides the evidence is overwhelming and I'm going to cut my losses, he could plead guilty rather quickly.
So just, again, cutting his losses versus why would he not just drag it out?
Correct. He doesn't have any incentive to cut his losses here. So he would want to drag it out as long as possible. He's got former Judge David Mason as his attorney. And I would expect that he would drag it out as long as possible so he could remain in office during that period of time.
We'll keep up with that story. Brad Young, thank you so much for filling in. Your legal expertise, appreciated as always.
It's a blast, Amy.
As Brad Young filling in for Chris Ranji, I'm Amy Mark Scores. Hey,